Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest radio station in the entire universe. It's true. We've checked. I've checked. Have you seen the global charts? But anyway, thanks for listening in today. You know what happened to me this week? I just want you to know. I had this little job, a part-time job that I really, really loved, and I didn't hear back from them. I got in touch with them, and I thought it was over. And at the same time, I also had this big order on this new product I'm developing, and that got canceled, or I thought it did. And then in the same day, that was yesterday, the order came back and I got an email about the job. So I just want you to know, like, I had really like been trashing myself and blaming myself. I actually thought it was all my fault. And then I made a big deal out of nothing and it all worked out. So I just want you guys to remember, like, don't get anxious about nothing like I do. You got to keep your shit together. And that was a reminder of the value of having some perspective. And we learned something there. And I'm feeling better. So I have a awesome, incredible guest on today, Marcellus Hall. He's put his hat on in a silly way. Marcellus, what's with the hat?
I thought it would help. It would free my mind, you know. Oh. If I just put this hat on.
It freed mine. Okay, so Marcellus came in. We had a lovely chat, and now he, in the middle of all this, put a. You're a blusher, aren't you, Marcellus?
Sunburn. I burn really easily.
Are you really sunburned from what?
From the sun.
Where? Just every day?
Just whenever I feel embarrassed, I get sunburned.
Oh, see. See that diversion? I see through that, Marcellus.
Okay.
So the impetus for Marcellus to be on the radio show today, the reason I got in touch with him, I've known Marcellus a while now. He's somebody that I have a huge amount of respect for and has been very, very generous in showing up to my things, which is so meaningful to me. I can't tell you. And I have told you, I think, right? Because...
Yeah.
It really blows my mind that you actually come to anything I do.
But I love your art. I love your approach.
Thank you.
It's funny, it's clever, and smart, and it's unique.
It's really meaningful to hear that from you, Marcellus, because this is definitely like a big mutual admiration society we have going here. So I haven't had that much of an opportunity to really dig into Marcellus's emotional life, which I really want to get to today. But before we do, I do want to make sure that you all know about his book called Kaleidoscope City, which is a graphic novel, but it's also like it has a real sensibility of a songwriter, actually, because Marcellus writes songs as well. I'm going to tell you about all his achievements, but first I want you to understand what so he's accomplished a lot of things, but he has done, I'll just give you one example of it. He's done like a whole bunch of New Yorker covers. Okay. So Marcellus, tell us four. That's a lot.
Okay.
Okay. So just tell us about the book so we can understand it. It's a bit of a lovelorn story.
Yeah. There's something about that. There's a solitary protagonist. He looks kind of like me. He lives in the city. He rides a bicycle, and he loves to observe things around the city. There's a motif of heartache throughout the book, and I wasn't even sure if it was called a graphic novel, but it's the book was a sort of a labor of love that I've been working on for a number of years, and I finally had it published this last month by bittersweeteditions.com. They sort of guided me. The guy there, the editor, Marco North, helped me put it together. And it's finally been launched.
You've had a lot of, it's gotten like, it's got a crazy amount of write-ups. I had to read, not that I had to read them all, but, you know, I got to be prepared. It took me a long time to get through your shit, man.
Really?
Yeah, it was a big job today. Yeah, my dog was like sitting there and I had somebody helping me clean today. It was like a little bit arduous, frankly. A lot of stuff, but the thing that I mentioned you as an illustrator, this is what I got out of the book and and your work in general, is that you're just kind of this person that rides around. You love New York City. You ride around on your bike. You carry your sketchbook everywhere. And like by nature, you're always just drawing everywhere you go.
Yeah, I studied art. I love drawing. And, it's my profession as an illustrator. So I see the practice of drawing as really important. And so I keep a sketchbook. And it's also, I found, and this fits perfectly with your show, I found it to be therapeutic. It's
sure.
You know what I mean? It's a mindless kind of endeavor, and it not only improves my skills, but it frees me up, you know,
oh,
for a moment.
It.
It's like, you know, that meditative kind of activity.
Right, which helps you get in touch with, like, just takes you away a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little like my husband, who's on his phone all the time, even at like parties, so that he can avoid everything and not be away on his own, except it's actually very productive.
Mm-hmm.
So a little dig at Phil. Sorry, Phil, honey. You know how I feel about the fubbing. Okay, here's Marcel's, I'm going to tell these people what you and I were just chatting before you got on the air. So this is what we were talking about, what I think we should at least start out with. So what I'm going to do is explain to you listener out there, how accomplished Marcellus is. And then I'm going to, when he's done blushing, if the place doesn't explode, I'm going to ask him about that and find out the reality behind it, because Marcellus has all these accolades and accomplishments that I find a little overwhelming for one person. It's all on Wikipedia, as a Wikipedia page, of course. And on top of that, here, get ready to blush. He's also really handsome and personable. How is that? How do you feel? Is that like horrible?
Thank you. No. That's nice to hear.
Okay.
Thank
okay.
You.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the list of things that I think Marcellus is accomplished about. He's an accomplished illustrator. Like I said, he has four New York Magazine covers, but he's also been in New Yorker covers.
Yeah.
New Yorker, the Wall Street Journal. He's also been in, his work has been the Atlantic, Time, American Illustration Society of Illustrators, Communication Arts Manuals, blah, blah, blah. He has illustrated a whole bunch of children's books. He's also written and illustrated his own book, which was published by like Abrams Major Publishing Company or Penguin Major
Penguin.
Publishing
Penguin.
Companies.
Yeah. My own children's book, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I illustrated eight others.
And on top of that, he also has this whole like recording, fronting a band career where he, like, here's some of the things that he's done in that arena. He opened for Superchunk, right? That's a big deal. Where was that? Was that at CBGB's?
Did
you open for Superchunk?
No, I think they opened for us.
Are they open for you? What am I saying?
I don't know. But
anyway,
I'm surprised that name. We've shared bills with many amazing bands.
Okay, tell us.
And bigger ones.
Tell us.
I don't measure bands by their size.
No, but these are our casual listeners. Just help me make my case that you're accomplished. Mm-hmm. Tell us.
Well, I don't know. I didn't bring a list of all the bands we played with.
Okay, well, name
one. But
we did,
you know what was nice? 5 years ago, the singer from Modest Mouse heard one of my songs called Life Is Still Sweet, and he loved it, and he tattooed the name of the song onto his arm, and then he contacted me and said, would you like to open for us? We played with Modest Mouse.
Fuck.
And then he said, would you like to put out an album of your solo material? I said, yeah, I don't have a label right now. And he put it out, and he let me make a booklet to go with the CD slash LP, and the booklet was filled with my drawings. So that came out, I don't know, 6 years ago. It's called The First Line. That's available somewhere. And we made another album since then, but that wasn't with him. But yeah, it's so nice to have the support of
people you respect. People, people that everyone respects. So was that really fun? Did you get to know him and hang out with him and do all that stuff? Did you get to know
him? Yeah, he got to know us and he got to hang out with us too.
Yeah. See, see, there's a guy with healthy self-esteem, which brings me to my next point before we really get into the nitty-gritty. And the next point is a quote that I found from Marcellus that where he actually shows that he has a real balance, his ego, he has a really good take on his accomplishments and his talents, which are vast and seem very natural. So he says he has a high regard for his work, but not too high, not too low either. It's right about where it should be. I am not too egotistical, yet I am not too self-deprecating either. And I think that is, and what did he say? I don't think my work is better than everyone else's, nor is it worst. I am just average, I guess. Moderation is best taken in moderation. I think I'm going to have that tattooed on my arm because I really need that.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. So what I'm going to do is try and poke at Marcellus and see if he, like right now I'm thinking, man, how does he live with being so naturally talented at everything? We're going to find out. So you do seem really naturally talented. I'm not taking away anything in that you're obviously hardworking and dedicated. There's no question about that. But you also must have some real like innate talent to have gotten that far in so many areas, no?
Yeah, I guess I think I have talents, and I try to exploit them, and I try to be disciplined about them, and you know, I see that as sort of as my obligation to
obligation in what way?
To make use of what whatever talents I have.
You mean you're grateful to have the talents?
Well, I'm definitely grateful, but I also feel it's an obligation for me to
maximize that.
Plug away, because it would be a shame, it would be a crime, it would be wrong for me to die without having tried.
Wow.
To exploit those things, that whatever they are. I mean, they're kind of hard to define, but I see my skills in illustration as the same, one and the same as my skills in music. Mm-hmm. They're not separate. It's just me trying to express myself in artful ways, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely have the same sensibility, you know, the same aesthetic. Mm. So what was it like growing up? Were you just like one of those kids that came out of the womb, like, you know, like with a paintbrush in your hand and, you know, a guitar? What was it like? Were you recognized right away as like a gifted child, or how was that?
I did get attention for drawing all the time. I remember in kindergarten doing that. And I remember actually maybe third or fourth grade, the school talent show, they had me stand up in front of the whole school with an easel, and I made drawings. I was petrified, and talk about blushing. But I did it. And I learned early that I could get attention from drawing, so I kept at it too. I think that's part of it as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. And did you?
But the music came later.
And the music? How about the music? When did you? When
came
did you,
later.
How did that develop?
I don't know. I think I think there's, you know, you don't get much applause, except for that moment in third grade when I was in front of the school. But you don't get much applause as an illustrator toiling away, or you know, somebody at home.
It's solitary.
Yeah. So I think I craved some more immediate attention, and so and I loved music. Right, so when it wasn't until I hit college that I decided, I can expand, I can do different things, and I love music, and there's a guitar lying over there. I'm going to try to learn to play it, and so that's what happened.
So you just picked it up, and then you worked hard at playing it. Did that come fairly naturally? It seems like
it
does.
I don't know. I don't regard myself as a great guitar player, but I get by and I play harmonica and I love actually singing, you know, and writing lyrics.
Singing and writing is really the focus.
Probably, yeah.
More because that's actually much closer to the visual art, isn't it? In a way, because your book, Kaleidoscope City, is kind of writing and drawing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's a lot like songwriting, singing, and... But it all comes from you. The instrument is another tool.
I think so.
Yeah. So did you play in junior high school, high school? Was it in school or? It
wasn't until college. Until college. Doing that. But I mean, I collected records. I remember writing down lyrics from songs that I liked. You know, I was sort of obsessive about mm-hmm. music.
Did you do any drawing inspired by music songs?
Oh yeah, all the time. I made drawings of musicians and caricatures, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and yeah.
I have a great portrait of Simon and Garfunkel directly off the Bookends album. I'll have to show it to you
really?
Sometime. Yeah.
Okay. A great what did you say? A portrait
drawing?
A drawing?
Yeah.
That somebody
pencil
made
sketch
that you made.
That I made. Exact.
Oh, that's great.
Really, I'm very proud of it.
Uh-huh.
So what was your childhood like? Did you have brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I'm the oldest of four kids.
Wow.
My parent, we grew up in Minnesota and, we have, we went to Catholic church. We went to public school. My parents, were left leaning and we did I say Minneapolis? I said Minnesota, but we were in Minneapolis, and it was, a good upbringing.
Fairly urban environment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not like a city, but like an urban-y kind of thing.
Have
not
you been
like,
there to Minneapolis?
I haven't.
No.
But I'm imagining it's not like a rural place or anything like that. Or the suburbs either. It's not a suburb, really, right?
No, but there are suburbs of it.
Mm-hmm. And was everybody like uber talented in your family, or what did your parents do? Are your brothers and sisters talented?
Yeah, everybody's talented, but I don't know how to measure that.
Well, let's look at the resumes.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, they all do different things. My brother works in the restaurant business. My sister is a social worker, and my other sister's a librarian. My mom is active in the League of Women Voters and teaches ESL, and my dad works in stocks and business.
Your dad's a business guy.
Yeah.
So he works in stocks and finance and that.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily pictured that. That's like a really serious business guy.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not what I'm into so much, but it's an interesting contrast, I guess.
Yeah.
And my mom's brother was a hardcore artist, through and through, which was inspiring to me as a
mm-hmm,
kid. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're wondering about role models.
Well, I mean, also I think there's likely some genetic talent mm-hmm. there. It
Possibly,
seems.
Yeah.
And did he draw well?
Yeah.
But you seem like the way your family's described, it seems like you are the only one who really pursued creative talent professionally. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess technically that's true.
No,
yeah.
Literally that's true.
My dad has written some books now that he's retired, like a memoir and things like that.
He's
flexing his creative muscles.
What kind of memoir?
You know, like people do when they get towards the end of their life to
about
sort of look back
career?
On his life. One was about his life and the other was about his career, yeah.
Wow.
Or about the business world. Yeah.
Oh, is he like a well-known guy? Is that something? Why would he write a biography then?
I don't know.
Is it self-published?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh. Can I read it? Can we have him on?
Yeah.
We should be promoting. We should be promoting his book.
Okay.
So did you learn anything about him from reading his books? Like, did you get any surprises from that?
No, I knew him pretty well,
mm-hmm.
aside from the
mm-hmm.
books.
So what was it like growing up in that family? What was it like? What was your parents' relationship like?
Hmm. It's hard, you know, it's hard to say, because, you know, we, like everybody, I grew up thinking my parents was the way that things are. And you don't know until later whether it's strange or unusual or something. Or
right. And here we are later.
So well, you know what?
Did it feel comfortable to you? Or,
yeah, I think I had a very, I was very lucky, and I have good parents, and we had a good family life, I think, in general. You know, we fought like most families. My parents are still together. It's important, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It says a lot. Yeah. They've been together more than 50 years now, I think. And I mentioned Catholicism. They weren't very strict. They were raised very strictly in a small town in Minnesota. And then the 60s and 70s came, and they became progressive Catholics. So we went to a hippie Catholic church.
Cool.
And it was, you know, the church was, although being Catholic, was pro-feminism and against nuclear weapons and things like that.
Oh, that's
it was
cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
Do you go to church now? Is that part of your life?
No.
So how did what role did you have in your family? Like, did you get along with your parents? Were you the oldest? Were you like in charge of things, or like what kind of role?
I was the oldest. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, you probably should ask my siblings what role I played.
But I mean, like with your parents, did you get along with both of them? How'd you get along with your dad? How'd you get along with your mom?
Yeah, I think when I compare my family to others, I think it's noteworthy that we all sort of got along, seems to be, and still do, on a sort of equal footing. Like, nobody has got any longstanding feud with another person. Nobody is against my mom or against my dad in some kind of outstanding way. So we all sort of bounce off each other in good ways and bad ways, you know?
You know what's interesting? I'm going to say this, that the way when I ask you, when you're talking about your family, it seems to me as if you're talking about them from a very observational point of view, as opposed from a feeling point of view. Like, I don't hear you saying like how you felt about the relationship with any. There's no what's going on
feelings,
there.
Yeah.
Are you an observer?
I don't know, but you know, well, definitely.
Obviously,
I'm an observer.
But
right. But I do think there's this weird. If you want me to sort of start theorizing or excavating that kind of stuff, there is something important about the German Catholic background that I think I grew up in that there's a certain like critical way of approaching things or you know, even though we grew up in a very free progressive you know, left-leaning family or whatever, there was, I think trickling down, there's always this like strict, you know, the Catholic Church has a lot of sexual strictures and things.
Right.
And I have a feeling that that kind of stuff sort of trickled down to us regardless of what kind of.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So how was sexuality approached in your family? That's a great question. Oh, and he's blushing again. I don't blame you. I mean, I'll just tell you, like, my family, there's Jews, but, like, the idea of, like, me having sex ever, you know, was, I mean, my parents slept in separate beds, so, I mean, you don't have to be Catholic, but, like, their attitude about anything about sex was just, sex is bad, sex is wrong.
Right, I think that's...
So how did your parents, like, did you have a girlfriend in high school or anything like that?
No, I bloomed later.
Oh, at least you bloomed.
Yeah.
So what happened? Like, how was...
I was really shy.
You were really shy growing up?
And I think there was a weird... well, I don't know. But I think you're right. It's sort of across the board. Many cultures are, when dealing with the topic of sex, are fraught. And people grow up confused. It's a confusing topic.
Well, or feeling guilty.
Yeah.
They feel guilty about sex because everybody is sexual and everyone people by nature enjoy sex like they enjoy eating and everything else that's natural, but we are also supposed to not do, and because it usually involves another person, it's really a disaster. So did you have any girlfriends in high school or no?
No,
you
said, I didn't. No, you didn't. And that was anybody. That was a source of, you know, I wish I had. I was just shy. I didn't know how to do it.
Were you frustrated? Did you want to, like...
Yeah, of course.
So there were girls that you were interested in, but you couldn't...
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't talk to them or it wasn't a possibility?
Yeah, I had... Oh, maybe it was, but I didn't know how to maneuver. And it wasn't until later that I...
What happened? What changed?
I don't know. I remember, you know, things really opened up when I went to art school.
RISD. He went to RISD.
Yeah. Because, you know what? I went to a small liberal arts school in Minnesota for 2 years and then transferred to RISD, actually. Mm-hmm.
And how was that when you were in the school?
The first one? The first school? Mm-hmm. It was weird because it was in the middle of the woods and it was all these Midwestern... It was a men's school and it was had a Catholic...
All men?
Yeah, but there was a sister school, you know, five miles away.
Oh, my God. Who's so
It was kind of my dad's urging because he went there and his dad went there. But the idea was for me to get a liberal arts education before focusing. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that I would study art, but they wanted me to at least, get the humanities.
Right. Were they worried about you being, like, studying art and not having a job? Your dad's very successful.
They were more worried about me just not having a broad mind.
I could see that. Yeah. An overall education.
Right.
So when you went to, so did things change when you went to RISD then?
Yeah. I suddenly felt, I felt attractive, you know, like I could meet people, but I didn't in high school. And so that was different. And I felt recognized in terms of, or better, you know, like people understood artistically what I was doing and I understood what, you know, there was all kinds of talented people there. And
right. You felt validated.
Inspiring. Yeah.
So what happened? Did you go there? Because I said he's an attractive, it's also like you have this shyness that is sort of like, I'm just glad I'm really old and married so I can say all this and get away with it. But so you have this sort of shyness that I'm sure women find appealing because it makes you seem more approachable. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Theoretically makes a sense. Yeah.
You were observationally.
But if I cop to that, then it's like, I mean, it doesn't matter.
You can say, I know what you mean, I guess.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But you were like fronting a band. I mean, when you're fronting a band, that's like, that's hot for anybody really. Even Jerry Garcia girls liked. But the point I'm making, what I want to get to is like, what happened? Did you all of a sudden arrive at RISD and all the girls were like, hey, there's a cute guy here who's not an asshole. Let's go after him. What happened?
I don't know what
they
said.
But did you find all of a sudden that women were available to you and you had never had that experience before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Was Things that like all up. In one day?
Yeah.
That was crazy. What was that like?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, yeah, it was a sort of a flowering. Like I knew, suddenly became more confident and knowing who I was. And
wow. It was like all of a sudden there were all these women. Did they follow you around and try to break into your dorm room?
No, this is your scenario.
I'm just trying to get you to blush because it's pretty silly. But anyway, so all of a sudden you're in school but what did it feel like? What did it feel like? I mean, I know it didn't happen like all in 1 minute, like you show up at campus, but I mean, your role in the world changed. That's huge, no?
Yeah. And that's when I started. It's funny. You're right about me being shy because I was, and I was deathly afraid of being on a stage, for example, but at the same time, I craved to be on a stage. And so I picked up the guitar and I was inspired by other students at that art school who were playing music.
My husband's lurking outside because I said so many things about you being cute. Look at that. Phil, you're distracting us. Oh, he's going to take a picture. All right, you can post that later. So that was stupid. That was distracting. I'm sorry. What happened? You all of a sudden...
I guess I was just saying that it's ironic because, yes, you're right. I was shy and I always have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this urge to get up on a stage and play music.
Right.
And I guess obviously overcame some shyness in order to do that. And I also felt like I could never play music, but then enjoyed it so much. That was my impetus. Like, if this is fun, if I like what I'm hearing when I record it back to myself or whatever, then I can pursue this. Like, I felt like the sky was the limit when I hit art school. You know, I could do, not that I could do it amazingly, but I just felt it was all valid.
Well, playing music for you must have been very liberating, because I feel like the sense I get from you is that you're innately shy, and you know shyness is pretty much, they think of it sort of like a biological nature thing. Did
really?
You know that?
No.
Yeah. I mean, you can, and you are, I think that's always with you a bit, right? Shyness?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very natural for you.
I thought we were, yeah, it comes to me naturally. I thought we were taught it, but you're saying something else.
Oh, yeah. You haven't.
I don't know. I better dig into this.
No, you thought you had control of your shyness. That's because your dad told you that. Somebody tell you? Did you get shit for being so shy?
I remember it was so horrible when it's all happening now too. But when kids at school would be like, "You're blushing. Look at him. He's turning red." And I was, and then it would just make me even more embarrassed.
Right. Well, I believe that's, I mean, it's natural. I mean, it's part of your nature, but did your family?
I'm fair-skinned, too. It doesn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't help. Did your family, were they okay with you being shy?
I don't know.
I mean, you didn't get, like, criticized for being shy or anything?
Oh.
Or pushed to be not shy? Were you accepted as shy? Shyness?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So being on stage must have been really good for you, because when you're a musician and you get on stage and you know your song and all that, you can kind of be another person.
Yeah, it was a form of acting. I remember, like, I would be scared or nervous to be on stage, and then I would put myself into another character and say, okay, I'm going to pretend to be confident.
Right.
And the key word is pretend. And then later you'd realize, oh, I really am confident now.
Yeah.
As long as you pretend, which I'm doing right now.
So you used all that to compensate for your innate shyness.
Yeah.
That's kind of good. I mean, do you feel like you can connect with people, or do you feel like there's this, how about when you get close to people? How about your close friends? Do you think that they see you as a very different person than like we do right now?
Than what?
Than we do here right now. Like, do you think that, what I'm wondering about is your shyness, is that, are you able to really be your, how hard is it for you to really be yourself, or do you even know what being yourself is?
No, I was going to say, who are we? Who am I? That's a question that I think.
Do you think, that occurs
I ask
to
myself.
You?
I mean, I can list my accomplishments, but that's not me.
Right. No, but, I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
For sure.
So yeah, we're on the same page, I think.
Right. Yeah. I have to remind people that they're listening to the greatest station in the world. Did you know that? I mean, I can't believe I have to remind them that, because they should know it, but they are. So thanks for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. You should download our app. It's so good, and you can listen to all our shows. And I'm here with Marcellus Hall, and we're talking about his emotional qualities and how how he's shy, but he found out that girls liked him when he got to college. So what was your initial foray into dating? Like, so you get to college, you realize that you can date girls and have sex. And what happens? How does that change? How do you respond to that? What happened there? Or should I just ask them, or is it in the yearbook somewhere?
I don't know. What do you mean? What do you mean, what happened there?
Like, did you get a girlfriend? Did you have sex before college?
21. I lost it when I was 21 to a French foreign exchange student. And you know, it was awkward, clumsy. And then later, then I did have a girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And yeah.
So how was that? How was it having a girlfriend?
It was great. I was a romantic guy, like anybody probably is when they're that age. I still might be. But you know, when you're with your first girlfriend, it's pretty important.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
How long did that last?
During the few years I was in college, you know.
Oh, so all through college?
Yeah.
And then what happened? Did you break up afterwards?
Yeah, I think it's a familiar story where you graduate and then both parties are looking towards other horizons. It wasn't easy. It wasn't mutual. She did a foreign exchange thing, you know.
Where was she from?
California.
Mm-hmm. Foreign? That's not foreign.
No, I'm saying she did a foreign exchange thing. She studied abroad.
Oh.
And then I moved to New York and,
oh,
you know.
Oh, so I see. She went to another country.
Yeah, she did.
Where'd she go?
Spain.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. A foreign exchange. She was from California.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I explained that wrong.
No, I probably. So I'm trying to picture this, but it's, can I just say this? Like, there's not a whole lot of forthcomingness here, which is totally fine. And
I'm pretty open, critical.
You know? You are definitely open, but I'm wondering what I'm wondering about is I'm just going to say this. I feel like I'm feeling some emotional disconnection.
Really? Between me and
you
myself?
And you. Yeah.
Or me and you?
No, you and you. I think I'm actually really. Yeah.
Oh,
but
is it the way,
in therapy, right?
I've dabbled in it. Yeah.
So what have you are you able to identify? I'm trying to picture like what happened when you started dating, how you felt about it and stuff like that. And I'm wondering like if all of a sudden, I'm imagining maybe you wanted to date a lot of different girls because you hadn't dated a lot. Mm-hmm. Did that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I was excited to start my life and the idea of meeting many different people was exciting.
Mm-hmm. And were your parents judgmental about that?
No, they were pretty hands off.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, maybe, you know, it's interesting. They, throughout my life, that's almost a taboo subject to ask their children about their romantic lives. I know that some parents will be like, are you dating someone now? How's it going? And I approve of that woman or that man or whatever. My parents never even go there because they're so afraid of what they see as meddling or something like that, which is that fear of meddling or fear of being mm-hmm. has been handed down to us mm-hmm. children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a quirky aspect, I think, of me and my family.
So you feel like they don't want to meddle in but does that make it feel like it's hard to communicate with them?
No, they would. Well, I do think that they would feel uncomfortable, you know, if I talk about my relationships. Yeah, there's that with my parents. Maybe that's true of a lot of people. I don't know.
It does. I mean, you know, I think it's all over the board with people. But mm-hmm. your parents, do you think that they avoided the idea that you were a sexual being?
Yeah, I think so.
They didn't want to think about that.
Probably.
What was their attitude about sex? Did they, were they affectionate or?
They weren't demonstrably affectionate with each other, but they loved each other and I think still do.
Mm-hmm.
But the topic of sex, the physicality, I think growing up, whenever that came up, I would recognize their discomfort and probably then I internalize discomfort mm-hmm. about that topic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Were any of your brothers or sisters particularly rebellious? Did anyone get in trouble for having sex?
Not that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Was your dad, I imagine your dad being like very demanding.
Really?
Yeah, was he? I mean, he's a pretty successful guy, right?
Why do you say that?
Well, because he's a finance guy, and finance is a very, you know, high-achieving field.
Is it?
I think
so. As opposed to others? Fields?
I think that you have to be able to manage a lot of very prescribed situations and things like that. Is he like that? Is he a predictable type guy in some ways?
Predictable?
Or what? Describe him.
Do you know that word persnickety?
Mm-hmm.
I love that word. You know some synonyms for that?
Mm-mm.
Finicky, meticulous, and there's another one. I forgot it right now.
Mm-hmm. Was he critical?
Yeah, and that, I mean, both my parents had a sort of critical faculty. Is that the right word? Phrase?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, anyway, and I think that I think is certain, has a certain, like we're not so attached to our heritage being...
white.
No.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say German.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a very, you know, the German character, there's certain qualities to the German character, a certain exactness, a certain meticulousness, a certain, you know, attention to order, things like that. And I think, you know, whatever, you know, growing up in America, growing up in a progressive hippie church or whatever, you know, in Minnesota, regardless of all that, I think some of that stuff trickles down into... And the only reason I say that is because I'm searching for answers about myself, and and I do it actively. And when I, you know, think about that, it starts to make some sense.
Yeah, I think that like those qualities, because I think there are,
and it can be oppressive. You know, some of those it can be good and bad.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, it's comforting, I guess, in a way that like there's a lot of boundaries, but on the other hand, there's a lot of rules, right?
Do
you feel conflicted about rules a lot? Like you should be doing, is there a should?
Yes.
A lot of shoulds?
I think I grew up with a lot of shoulds, like moral things and a lot of concern about what will people think. You know, the right thing to do that would make you appear right. And to me, that's weird because it's not what's right. It's what appears to be right.
Right.
You know, there's a difference between that. And that that always confuses me. I mean, technically, we should be doing what's right. But if your rule is to do what appears to be right, you know, by society standards, then that's a whole different thing. Then you're concerned about appearances. And that's a weird, narcissistic, selfish, fearful thing, maybe, you know, at its worst.
Well, you're trapped by it.
Yeah.
It's confusing because you're kind of trapped like, well, this seems like the right thing or what would be the sincere, honest thing, the best thing to do. But then there's the right thing to do and you want to do the right thing. But then if you do what you're supposed, what's the true thing to do, then you can wind up feeling guilty. You can't win.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that did to me either, but no, that sounds...
I guess it's just a question of motivation, like what... And then the question of what is right and why is it right? Maybe what we determine to be right in any realm, like sexual or relationships or business or whatever, maybe it all is determined by society. You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't know. I believe in human nature and stuff. I think that, you know, I mean, we're all trying to do the best we can. And I mean, most of us, and really just do what the most we're capable of. We're not all capable of doing the right thing all the time. And fuck that shit anyway. That's so boring. I'm wondering how that must have really come up with women though, because... I know as a young man or any man, like the idea of what you would like to have happen with women and what's always right is a big conflict, right? Was that a big problem for you? Or
yeah, is that, you're right, that's very true. Is that not true with women? I think it must be true with women too, but in a different way, right?
Women are idiots. No, women.
Men too.
No, but women, I think generally, you know, they want the boyfriend and they want the relationship and they want the mm-hmm. commitment. And I've seen that over even with these young people, young women I've interviewed in Bushwick. I mean, they think they're cool and they don't care if there's commitment or not, but there's part of them that really wants that. Whereas men, I think, or young men particularly, are just really different biologically, and they're just really comfortable. They're comfortable having anonymous sex or whatever,
right.
whatever you want to call it,
right.
pal sex. And women want to be and believe they are, but I think it's hard, and I think we all know that. So I think that's a real conflict. I don't think men have the same problem.
Yeah, you're right.
Testosterone's intense.
It is, yeah. I think you're right.
So how was that? Or how do you feel about that?
It was interesting. I mean, it is an ongoing thing for a man, I think, at least in my experience, yes. I'm always wondering about that. Like, what is expected of me? What is a man supposed to do? And then at the same time, I do have biological urges that are just, you know, animalistic and
yeah.
I mean, believe it or not, no, I do. And they run against the traditional conventions sometimes, you know.
Like, your parents wouldn't be proud of you if you did X.
It's funny, you know, I don't think they ever verbalized that, but I think, I guess what I was getting at earlier, I think I've internalized some things like that.
Like
I sort of know, I understand what they would disapprove of. And then, but when I really examine it, it's maybe not that quote unquote wrong.
Right. Yeah. You've internalized it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I feel conflicted about what one should do and what, you know.
What you've internalized.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be complicated. How does that affect your relationships? Do you think?
I think it does. I mean,
is it,
but you know, one thing I have going for me, I think, is that I'm open.
I have a list here of what's going for you besides.
No, I mean, yeah, I have the list of accomplishments. Yeah,
and
I mean,
but charming
that all blows away in the wind when I'm faced with the real, you know, the dirty work, you know, getting down with human interaction. You know, there's always conflicts, and yeah, that stuff does. What I was going to say, what I have going for me is I feel I'm always willing to explore it and talk about it openly with whomever there are conflicts with.
I think it must be really hard on you more than maybe even the other person.
It certainly feels that way a lot, but I take it hard when whatever I do causes pain to other people. I'm hard on myself. So that's what you mean.
Yes.
Why do you think that? Or why do you sense that?
I mean, that you're hard on yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Because you internalize all those rules.
Oh, but that's just because I said I do, right?
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah, what do I see here? I see somebody who is weighing. And I feel, you know, completely comfortable here, and I feel like you're being very in the moment and truthful and all that. But I mean, I just think by nature, you're much more guarded than I would have thought. Let's put it that way. And
okay.
I don't take that personally. I think that you really, but I think it's hard for you. I don't think it's hard on anybody else, because I think that you question your behavior or... You question yourself, but you know, more, and it's not fair to you. Like that's, you know, like you don't need, you're great. Do you feel guilty about, like, this is what I really want to know. Have you had sex with women that you feel guilty about? Have you done things like that you feel guilty about?
You mean guilty about having...
Like sex with girls and you didn't call them again, or the girls that got mad at you, that kind of thing?
No, I mean, to be honest, I've made peace with that so-called conflict, but I do feel guilty about not being able to come through as a great guy and causing pain or heartache, not regarding sex. I just mean
commitment.
Do you have trouble with commitment?
Have you ever been married?
I haven't.
And you're in your 40s, right?
Probably. Somewhere up there.
Maybe in your 40s, only by the math. He looks great. I mean, you know, you could be 30-something. You could be 38. Like, if you, it's just the math. Mm. So you haven't been married. And when was the last time you had a long-term relationship?
Just over a year ago, I had a relationship that ended.
How long were you in the relationship?
I would say 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And what's your longest relationship?
7.
And when was that?
A
long, long time ago.
Yeah.
So it seems like you have trouble with commitment.
No, I think 3 years was a pretty serious attempt at commitment. And before that was another 3-year relationship.
Mm-hmm. And how did it end? Can I ask that?
It was difficult. It was protracted and it was painful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
That doesn't sound good. Well, so it was kind of mutual then, but or there was it wasn't a whole one sided thing.
No, it wasn't like it wasn't somebody cheated and then somebody got hurt. It's more like, what the fuck? Something's not working. We got to talk about it. Oh, but I miss you. Oh, but let's do this. Let's do that. I'm going to go talk to somebody about this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's...
How do you feel about like getting married? Is that something that you're interested in?
Yes, I have nothing against that. In fact, more and more as I get older, it's something that appeals to me. But it's telling, obviously, that mm-hmm. I haven't been married. Mm-hmm. You know, but I really do value or seek to have a one-on-one relationship mm-hmm. with somebody.
Yeah.
And I've had that. I'm just saying that right now I'm not... in yeah. relationship. Yeah.
I think it must, you know, you are really hard on yourself and maybe it's your charm and your downfall in that, like, it's what like makes you so, you know, like decent and trustworthy. I think I get a really good feeling about you that way. And it's also like, you're incredibly disciplined and hardworking, get a lot out of it. But I also think, you know, you're probably very self-critical about your work, blah, 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 blah. But we
got it. Double-edged sword.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe you don't want to let it go because you get. I mean, it's conflicting to let all that go because you get a lot out of it.
Mm.
But I do want to. We only have a few minutes left, and I kind of want to get back to the original question. See, so I announced all those things that all those accomplishments. So, is there, like, looking, going back to the beginning, like looking at you, like you've had in like. At least work in a creative career, you've had it. It seems golden to me. Does it seem that way to you?
I feel really good about the things I've accomplished. I strive to accomplish more things. Mm-hmm. It's not like some kind of, you know, greedy, possessive collection of things that I want to do. But I look back and see the things I've accomplished, but I also see the cracks in the facade, the mm-hmm. things that aren't right about them, the things I'd like to do better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm striving towards something, a certain kind of amazing, perfect piece of art, of a song or a drawing or a painting or mm-hmm. lyrics or a book, whatever. And I'm sure I'll never achieve it, but mm-hmm. I'll keep striving unless mm-hmm. ennui takes over.
I don't think you're way too self-critical to ever achieve that. But do you see?
Wait, you mean self-criticism will thwart my ability to achieve good art?
No, you will achieve it and it will never be good.
Oh,
you
have in my mind, right.
Yeah,
yes,
you're never
true.
Good. You have never good enough syndrome, I think, right? Never
yeah,
good
but,
enough?
But I think that's the nature of somebody who's making art and creating things, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have satisfaction too. And I'm sure you get, you know, sometimes you're like, wow, that was great. You get that?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm a little more healthy than you might believe. When I look back, I can say that was a good effort, and that's something I'm proud of. I can
mm-hmm.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do that.
So it seems, yeah, so it seems like you've never had a regular job or anything, right?
I've worked 9 to 5 before.
Really? Where?
Like out of college, I did some things. You know.
Yeah, but mostly you've been able to make a living off your work,
I've
right?
been lucky,
have
yeah.
you, so you appreciate that.
Yes, definitely.
You realize that.
I'm really lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to do something and sustain myself for a while, at least up until at this point, and to enjoy doing it.
Mm-hmm. And you seem like you have like a really good social life, like, right?
I like New York, and there are a lot of things going on, and I love to experience those things.
Mm-hmm. So you got a lot going for you. It's just that goddamn piece of work is never going to be good enough.
No.
You know, but this is really funny. So the thing that's really hard for me to understand about you is that it's just really hard to understand where it's like what you said about being internalized, because I guess I would like for you to really enjoy what you have,
mm-hmm.
and to be happy with an A-.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you could be the best A- ever
right.
in all of your actions yep. and everything. And if you
yeah.
could be like, I'm an A- in all my actions, yeah. and then like, oh man, I fucked that one up and let it,
yeah.
do you let things go or do you think about them? You hold them,
no,
hold on to them?
I don't obsess about
what you
things
fuck
that could
up.
Have been better, yeah.
Or like how you treated somebody or something like that.
Maybe I do that a little bit
yeah.
too much.
Yeah.
Because I hold on for a long time.
See, this is funny too, what you just said, too much. Maybe I do that too much. You are always, that's a judgment on yourself. Do you
yeah.
see how that's a judgment
Didn't
on yourself?
Didn't you just ask me to judge myself?
Maybe. Maybe. But
you, maybe you didn't. Judgment was probably not what you were asking for. You were asking for an assessment.
I was asking for an evaluation.
Right.
I got a judgment. Oh, but that was smart. You made me think.
Okay.
You know what? I feel like I've grilled you enough. You've been awesome. And
you've been awesome.
No. You.
No.
You. You. But I also want to share your music. So this is what I'm going to do, folks. We have like 2 minutes left, and I'm going to play just one of the songs. They'll all be on my Facebook page and when I post this episode. So I'm going to play some of Marcellus's fabulous music. But before I go, I want you to stay tuned, okay? Because right after this is Lost and Rewound, which my good friend Alon Danziger, everyone at the station just loves Alon. And at the meetings, you know, our group community meetings, they rave about his show. So you better fucking stick in there and listen, okay? So here we are. We're going to play this song called, what's it called? The Star? What's the name of it?
Oh, it's called Star Position.
Star Position. And appropriately enough, this is about being single.